Madam President, I move that further proceedings on the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. All opposed say nay. The motion prevails, and the Sergeant-at-Arms will bring in the absent members. Today's chaplain is Rabbi Sim Glazer from Temple Israel in Minneapolis. After the prayer, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Morning. All our lives are prayers. All our decisions are holy works. All the words that come from our mouths are hymns that ascend to heaven. All our actions are religious deeds. In the book of Ecclesiastes, we read, "There is a time for every purpose under heaven, and today, here and now is our time. Help us fashion our souls so as to be grateful for our blessings. Help us to heal societal wounds and build a better tomorrow for those whom we represent today, to bring Minnesota to its rightful place among our states and our great country in the Council of Nations. Let us remain a beacon of hope and light, and let us say, Amen."
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
The secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Benson, Bonoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Champion, Clausen, Cohen, Dahl, Dames, Dibble, Dietzick, Eaton, Eakin, Fishbach, Franzen, Gazelka, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Herr, Hayden, Hoffman, Housley, Ingebrigtsen, Jensen, Johnson, Kent, Kiffmeyer, Kunin, Latz, Limmer, Lori, Marty, Metzen, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Ortman, Osmick, Pappas, Peterson J., Peterson B., Pratt, Reinert, Rest, Rosen, Rood, Saxhog, Scalzi, Schmidt, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Sparks, Stumpf, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Weber, Westrom, Uyghur, and Wickland.
A quorum is present. We move to the eighth order of business, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. Senate bills will be referred as indicated, first reading. The ninth order of business, motions and resolutions. These are author motions. We'll adopt as one motion. Get ready for the vote. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Is Senator Latz in the chamber? All right. Then Senator Reinert. Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Madam President. I would move that Senate file number 53 be withdrawn from the Committee on State and Local Government and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. And Madam President, I'm fine with that. I've talked to both chairs, and that's the chair preference as well.
And this is your bill?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Then all those in favor of the Reinert motion say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senate resolution number 31 will be referred. A Senate resolution honoring Rochester Community and Technical College will be referred to the Rules Committee. Remaining under motions and resolutions, we return to Senate bill introductions. There is one change. Yeah. On page 3, Senate file 339 will be referred to the Committee on Judiciary.
We can wait on it.
Those bills having been given their first reading. Now, Senator Bach.
Uh, Madam President, I would move that the Senate take up the confirmation calendar.
All those in favor of that motion say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Bach? Nope. Now we refer to each person. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, I move that the report from the Committee on Transportation and Public Safety reported January 31st, 2013, pertaining to the appointment of the Commissioner of Transportation be taken from the table.
All those in favor of that motion say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that, in accordance with the report from the Committee on Transportation and Public Safety reported January 31st, 2013, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of, for the Department of Transportation, Commissioner position, Charles A. Zelli.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm pleased to place before the Senate the nomination of Charlie Zelli as for confirmation as Commissioner of Department of Transportation to take up the role that Commissioner Sorrell served so ably in. Madam President, members, Commissioner Zelli brings a deep and long-standing experience as a business person, as a business leader, as well as a civic leader to this role. As members may be aware, Commissioner Zelli has served as the CEO of Jefferson Lines, which is an inner-city bus line that serves communities throughout the state of Minnesota and communities all the way down to the state of Texas. He's very knowledgeable about the role of transportation as a business owner involved in the transportation industry, about the opportunities and the challenges that transportation represents. Members may not know that Jefferson Lines has served many of our small communities throughout Minnesota when all other inner city forms of transportation have abandoned those small towns. Often this is the only non-private car connection that people have with other areas of the state and other areas of the country. Commissioner Zelli has served as chair of the Minneapolis Chamber of Commerce, chair of the Itasca Group. In both of these roles, he really helped lead bringing the business voice to the conversation, the debate we have around transportation, really arguing for the role that transportation plays in our economic life and our economic competitiveness, connecting jobs to people and people to jobs, making sure that we're building communities that work for all people, that we're developing the most economically efficient state that we possibly can. Madam President, Commissioner Zelli was born and raised in St. Paul. He served as the president of the boards of the Minneapolis Club, the Guthrie Theater, Meet Minneapolis, St. Paul Academy, American Bus Association. He served on the executive committee of the University of Minnesota Center for Transportation Studies. He's been recognized for his work in transportation policy and received several awards to that effect. I'm proud to say he's my constituent. He lives in Minneapolis with his wife Julie, who's a minister, and his daughter Charlotte, and his son Nick. With that, Madam President, I renew my motion.
Are there any other comments?
Madam President.
Sorry, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. I have a few items that I'm distributing relating to this nomination that I thought you should be aware of. I'm rising to support Commissioner Zelli as well and hope that you would consider giving him your favorable response today. But however, there are some questions that I asked him personally when we met, as well as in his confirmation hearing in Transportation and Public Safety Committee. You know, it's important to note that the DOT does have responsibility for distributing some federal grants. That's the first handout that I provided for you. It relates specifically to grants 5311, paragraph F. These are federal grants that the Department of Transportation is responsible for distributing to intercity bus lines. And you'll see there that that application process is still open and is open till March 15th of this year. And it's common knowledge that Jefferson Lines has received these grants in the past. The second handout that we have for you there is also more information relating to the grants there from an article you'll see from a publication called busride.com. And then finally, the third handout is an example of the conflicts that can arise in a community when we have these types of grants distributed to one organization and not to another in a community. It can create a competitive disadvantage. And so I think a fair question that we posed to the commissioner in the hearing and privately was how he might separate himself from the distribution of these grants. Clearly, as the commissioner of the Department of Transportation, he will have the ultimate sign-off and ultimate responsibility for distributing these grants, and it may very likely be to the company that he is the majority owner of. You know from the information that he owns 60% of the shares in Jefferson Bus Lines. That means as a partner, he has a significant impact on those decisions affecting that organization and could be a conflict of interest if this organization were to receive grants through his department from the federal government. And so I would ask Madam President if Senator Dibble would yield.
Will Senator Dibble yield? Senator Dibble will yield. Senator Peterson.
Senator Dibble, in the committee, I think we asked Commissioner Zelli how he would handle this situation, and if I'm summarizing his response correctly, he had said he'd been clear with the governor and checked with his legal counsel and that they were going to be working on some kind of process to separate himself from this decision-making process. Do you have any other information at this point on what that process might be?
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President, and Senator Peterson. I appreciate the question and the due diligence. Indeed, the answer to your question is yes. I think the one statement that you made that I would say is actually not factually true is that Commissioner Zelli will have a sign-off and authority over the distribution of these grants. And in fact, Commissioner Zelli has executed a document that lays out in fairly good detail exactly how he will separate himself from the decision-making, from any knowledge, both in his role as commissioner as well as in his involvement with Jefferson Bus Lines, from any knowledge of any of these grants as they're being considered, as they're being proposed, as any decisions are being made on those. So he will be separated from those decisions and, in fact, won't even be aware of them as they're proceeding and will have no involvement whatsoever. It's a document that's been I have it here if anyone wants to inspect it. It's been laid out in fairly fine detail and signed and dated by Commissioner Zelli.
Madam President, Senator Dibble, could you share with us when that document was made available and a reason why maybe it wasn't shared with the entire Transportation and Public Safety Committee at the time of this hearing?
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Senator Peterson. No, I don't know the answer to that question.
Madam President, Senator Dibble, would you be willing to provide a copy to the Transportation Committee at your earliest convenience, sir?
Senator Dibble.
Yes, Madam President. This is a public document. Happy to share it with whomever would like it. I'll make sure that the entire Transportation Committee has a copy of that.
Again,
Senator Peterson.
Yep, Madam President. I would encourage members to support Commissioner Zelli, but please be aware of this potential conflict of interest, and it may cause in your communities. And I think it's important that we watch out for that as we move forward. And I'll look forward to reviewing the document that Commissioner Zelli has prepared to ensure this body that he will separate himself from the decision-making process in those grants. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Madam President. Just to maybe follow up on Senator Peterson's comments, and also, I guess, specifically the article from the News Tribune that the Senator handed out. First of all, I do also encourage your support for Commissioner Zelli. As Senator Peterson highlighted, we did have this conversation at some length in the Transportation Committee. I asked a couple questions, too, around this conflict of interest issue, and encourage the hopefully new commissioner to consider at some point leaving the board of Jefferson Lines, which will be, you know, a bit difficult and take some time. It's a family business in which he's been involved for some time. But there is, if not the reality, the perception of a potential conflict of interest, and I think that's important for the new commissioner to consider. I did also just want to take a moment to speak to this article. As you might guess, since the city of Duluth is essentially my Senate district, I know this issue well. The important difference is that Jefferson Lines, it connects into a regional transportation network throughout the state. That's why they were eligible for this federal funding. The Skyline Shuttle business, which is mentioned here, which I should say I've actually been a customer of, in full disclosure, is point-to-point and therefore did not qualify for the same program. Thank you, Madam President.
Senator Cohen.
Madam President, let's be clear. There's no conflict of interest. Commissioner Zelli was appointed by Governor Dayton to be Commissioner of MnDOT. If we're going to ask people to come from the private sector to the public sector, bring their business experience relative to their particular business, bring their experience relative to what they've done in the community, they're going to be involved with a number of issues, a number of factors that may or may not interface with an agency they've been requested to head. If we have somebody coming from the private industry to be Health and Human Services Commissioner, if we have somebody coming from the private industry to do any number of things in state government or federal government, there are always going to be things in that person's background relative to what he or she did in the private sector. But let's make it clear, there's not a conflict of interest until there is a conflict of interest. In this case, we have Commissioner Zelli, who's made it very clear that he is going to remove himself from any decision-making relative to Jefferson Van Lines. And to suggest on the floor of the Senate that there is a conflict of interest is simply a red herring relative to somebody who's been one of the most respected members of the business community in Minnesota, who has a family history going back approximately 80, 90 years in this state. In terms of transportation, this is not somebody with a conflict of interest.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator Dibble, if you could yield for a brief question.
Will Senator Dibble yield? Senator Dibble yields. Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam President and Senator Dibble. Will Commissioner Zelli be receiving any ongoing compensation from his work in the transportation industry?
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. I don't know the answer specifically, yes or no, to that question. However, I know that, you know, he will continue to be related to Jefferson Bus Lines, so I don't know what form of compensation there is, but, you know, it is a family-owned business and will continue to be so.
Senator Peterson.
Madam President, it was not my intent to drag this into a significant debate, but to respond to Senator Cohen, Madam President, there clearly is an issue. If there was not an issue, Senator Cohen, Commissioner Zelli would not have prepared a document that none of this body have seen yet, apparently except for Senator Dibble, that will outline the process, how he's going to separate himself from this decision-making process. The fact is, Commissioner Zelli owns 60% of the shares of Jefferson Bus Lines, and you have the documentation in front of you that he receives millions of dollars in grants to buy buses, up to 80% of the cost of those buses, the capital equipment. Again, I'll repeat, I would encourage members to support this nomination, but please, please be aware of this potential conflict as we move forward. Thank you.
And Madam President,
Senator Benson.
I hadn't finished my statement. I just wanted to be clear with the body that as we move forward and confirm Commissioner Zelli, he will be receiving compensation from an industry over which he has oversight. And while I don't believe there's an inherent conflict of interest, let's be aware of this for future decisions we have to make when we're appointing people to oversight positions.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm not sure what Senator Benson means by oversight. The Department of Transportation, you know, it doesn't oversee, the private bus industry per se, other than, you know, of course, the buses use the roads. But again, I think the conflict issue is dealt with very well in the agreement and the arrangement and the specificity that the governor, MnDOT, and Commissioner Zelli have come into. And I just want members to be clear that Jefferson Bus Lines at some instances at some expense to itself continues a fairly important service to many of our small communities where no other similar service has been made available. They've continued to maintain and keep that commitment. So that's something important for us to remember, that in some instances, some of these towns around Minnesota simply have no other form of connection outside of driving in a private car to other parts of the state and other parts of the country. But like I said, he's going to separate himself and not be involved in any way, shape, or form in what is actually federal grants that are simply passed through. And with that, Madam President, I renew my motion.
Is there any more discussion? Then Senator Dibble moves that the Senate, having given its advice, do not consent to and confirm the appointment of Department of Transportation Commissioner Charles A. Zelli. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The appointment was confirmed. Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the report from the Committee on Health and Human Services and Housing, reported January 31st, 2013, pertaining to the appointment of the Commissioner of Human Services, be taken from the table.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. The motion prevails.
And I further move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Health and Human Services and Housing, reported January 31st, 2013, that the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of Lucinda E. Jessen as Commissioner of the Department of Human Services.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Madam President. It really is an honor to stand here before you to talk about Commissioner Lucinda Jessen and to encourage you to support her appointment. In January of 2011, Governor Pawlenty appointed Lucinda Jessen to lead the Minnesota Department of Human Services. But prior to that, the commissioner served as a law professor and a founding director of the Health Law Institute at Hamline University. Jessen brings deep knowledge of the health and human service industry and has a breadth of legal and management experience both in public and private sectors. Commissioner Jessen has proven public sector management experience and policy expertise in regulation and government programs. She has served government as both the local and state levels, including Attorney General for Health and Licensing for the Minnesota Attorney General Office, and as Chief Deputy of Hennepin County, where she led the day-to-day operations of that office. Jessen has previously been a partner and of counsel to Oppenheimer, Wolf, and Donnelly, as well as the founder of her own law firm. I simply would go back to say that in terms of this background and experience across all of these sectors makes her uniquely prepared to perform the functions of Commissioner of the Department of Human Services. Because the Department of Human Services provides essential services to Minnesota's most vulnerable residents, working with many others, including counties, tribes, nonprofits, the Department of Human Services ensures that Minnesota seniors, people with disabilities, children, and others meet their basic needs and have the opportunity to reach their full potential. In order to facilitate the decision that you have to make today, I'd like to discuss with you some of the results that have been delivered during the time that Commissioner Lucinda Jessen has served in this position under the Dayton administration. The list is quite substantive, so I will try to be as brief as I possibly can. In the area of providing smart care that keeps people healthy and in their homes and communities, In 2012, the accomplishments with Lucinda Jessen under the Dayton administration include implementing changes to the Minnesota Care Program to eliminate premiums for children and to expand access for children, 16,000 children in Minnesota. She has created a consultation service with the Mayo Clinic for doctors to ensure proper prescribing of psychotropic medications and expanded the Safe Haven Law to protect newborns. She's continued progress towards keeping the goal of more Minnesotans in their homes and in their communities and out of institutions. With community partners, ARC Minnesota, they've moved more than 500 people with disabilities into their own housing. Community living specialists directly assisted more than 500 nursing home residents in an effort to return them from those residences to their own communities. Through Senior One Stop, 12,000 additional Minnesotan seniors. DHS has launched a next step of this one-stop shop for Minnesota seniors, which includes Share Minnesota. This phase helps older adults find volunteer opportunities through a virtual network of agencies. This is about keeping seniors active and engaged and using their talents in our communities. She's improved Minnesotans' access to nutritious foods through the Department of Human Services, Nutritious Food Coalition has received a federal award for performance and increased access for more than 41,000 Minnesotans, including seniors. Under innovation, in which we try to redesign our healthcare systems, under Lucinda Jessen, in the 2012 year, we've developed Reform 2020. This is a comprehensive plan to redesign long-term care services to provide the right service at the right time and in the right place and improve the stability of the medical assistance program. Under Lucinda Jessen and the Dayton administration, we've made Minnesota a better purchaser of health care and recovered more than $70 million in excess profits from health maintenance organizations. Under this leadership, we've incentivized better health care services at a lower cost. We've laid the groundwork for a new healthcare delivery system for 150,000 Minnesotans that pays providers to keep people healthy and not just treat them when they're sick. They've certified 155 clinics as healthcare homes, started the childbirth initiative in an effort to reduce the number of induced deliveries before 39 weeks. This is intended to improve the health outcomes of newborns while reducing spending at the same time, and has integrated telepresence into client services in two major statewide programs, state-operated services and the Minnesota Sex Offender Program, resulting in better access and care for clients and reducing costs because of reduced and unnecessary travel. Under equity, which is about narrowing disparities and improving outcomes, under this administration, Commissioner Jessen has narrowed the health care quality gap between public and private enrollees on 5 of 8 statewide measures, built efforts to increase the percentage of children in the welfare system receiving mental health screening, particularly in the American Indian children, and made health care much more accessible to all Minnesotans. In the area of disparities, an example of this is implementing Minnesota care coverage for non-citizen children under 21 years of age and non-citizen pregnant women. And integrity, which is reducing fraud, waste, and abuse. Under this leadership, we have built on recoveries in 2011 of more than $60 million from torts, liens, and fraud-related investigations, and we have increased the oversight of the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program to ensure proper use of these program's resources. So it is with honor that I present Commissioner Lucinda Jessen for your consideration.
Is there any discussion? Senator Hahn.
Madam President, members, I am rising to support the confirmation of Commissioner Jessen. In the last 2 years, when I had the honor and the privilege to serve as the chairman of the Health and Human Services Committee in the Senate, I had the opportunity to work with Commissioner Jessen. I found to be a very professional and competent individual, and we had a very good, I thought, working relationship along with the members of the other body in working on a very difficult budget that we had to construct in the 2011 year, as many members may recall. One thing that you may remember during that year Typically, the Health and Human Services budget, being one of the larger and more complex budgets, usually, if in the past, was one of the last ones that was completed. But I think due to the working relationship that we had and we were able to create, we were able to make very good progress, and actually we're not the last budget to have gotten completed in that year. And I attribute that, frankly, to the ability that she demonstrated and being able to work with us and very constructively, and we were able to enact a great number of reforms, and so I just would want to remind members of that. And even though we do not always agree and share the same philosophical views on a number of issues, which is to be expected given that she's an appointment of Governor Dayton, nevertheless, I think she is a very competent and fine person to fill that role, and I would urge your support in her confirmation.
Is there any other discussion? Seeing none, Senator Sharon renews her motion that the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of Department of Human Services Commissioner Lucinda E. Jessen. All those in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevailed, so the appointment was confirmed. Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise again in front of this body to make another recommendation for confirmation to the Department of Health of Commissioner Dr. Edward Ellinger. I move that the report from the Committee on Health and Human Services and Housing reported January 31st, 2013, pertaining to the appointment of the Commissioner of Health be taken from the table.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. The motion prevailed.
I also move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevailed.
And finally, I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Health and Human Services and Housing reported on January 31st, 2013, that the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent and confirm the appointment of Dr. Edward P. Ellinger as the Department of Health Commissioner.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. And again, it's an honor to address the body on behalf of Dr. Edward Ellinger. As we all know, the Minnesota Department of Health is the state's lead public health agency and responsible for protecting, maintaining, and improving the health of all Minnesotans. And that is why, because of the function and responsibility of this department, that Commissioner Ed Ellinger is uniquely prepared in order to carry out the responsibilities of a commissioner. Governor Dayton appointed Dr. Ed Ellinger to be Minnesota's Commissioner of Health in January 2011. Commissioner Ellinger, by the way, there is in front of you a resume for you to refer to in terms of the substantive background and experience that Dr. Ellinger brings to this position. But just to highlight that, Dr. Ellinger previously served as the Director and Chief Health Officer for Boynton Health Service at the University of Minnesota from 1995 to 2011, and he's also served as an adjunct professor in the Division of Epidemiology and Community Health at the University of Minnesota School of Public Health. And from 1980 to 1995, he served as a Director of Personal Health Services for the Minnesota Health Department. So Commissioner Ellinger earned his medical degree from the University of Wisconsin and has received numerous awards for his work to educate citizens about important public health issues. He brings a passion for promoting and advancing public health with a special dedication addressing the root causes of chronic disease such as diabetes, cancer, and heart disease. And so within the context of understanding that deep passion for addressing root causes, it's important to acknowledge some of the results that have occurred during the last years in which Ed Ellinger has been serving as commissioner. So thanks to the leadership of Commissioner Ellinger and the Department of Health, we've made important progress toward reforming and improving the service it delivers to the people of Minnesota. The following initiatives highlight the Health Department's top 10 accomplishments under the Dayton administration. Number one is giving kids healthy food. Remember the earlier statements that we're talking about root causes, attacking those things that we can do ahead of time in order to prevent those chronic diseases such as diabetes, cancer, and lung disease. And this program, the SHIP program, giving healthy foods to kids in schools, is a part of that initiative. And as a result of the Great Trays, that's the lunch tray concept, it's an initiative in the schools. SHIP Farm to School Efforts, another SHIP program, and the Salad Bar Initiative in schools over the last 2 years, more than 200,000 students enjoy more fruits and vegetables in their school lunches. Eating more fruits and vegetables helps reduce the rising burden of obesity that is harming the health of our population and driving up the health care costs while teaching children about agriculture and supporting Minnesota farmers. A second initiative is improving the safety of food. The safety of Minnesota's food supply was further protected by promoting greater education with a special focus on personal hygiene and food safety. Thousands of volunteer and faith-based organizations were trained in food safety to prevent people who get sick at potluck dinners from getting foodborne illnesses. Improving access to information about public health issues. Getting information is critically important for all of us to change our culture and change our habits, and for us as legislators to know what direction we should go with legislation. MDH has launched a new interactive web portal that integrates data on a variety of health environment outcomes, such as asthma, quality, air quality, cancer, reproductive health, and birth outcomes, and child-led poisoning. With this wealth of data easily accessible on the MDH website, public health agencies, policymakers, that's us, and the general public can better understand significant health issues affecting Minnesotans. Preventing diabetes, a hugely expensive programs in our healthcare programs. The Diabetes Prevention Program provided more support to 14 organizations in 25 locations and 31 groups through the I Can Prevent Diabetes program. Through this program, there are a number of people that are trained as lifestyle coaches. 75% of these coaches have offered low-income populations through these grants education about preventing diabetes. The Minnesota Extension Service is Simply Good Eating program or other programs serving Minnesota American Indians are helping initiate activity to eliminate health disparities. Also, providing free cancer screening for women. 35,977 low-income women have been assessed for cervical and breast cancer, of whom 65% were uninsured. Women were diagnosed with breast cancer, and 12 were diagnosed with cervical cancer. These initiatives save us a great deal of money in terms of the long-term expensive costs if these are not early identified. Eliminating health disparities. The department has awarded 47 new Eliminating Health Disparities Initiative grants to 47 community partners that work towards eliminating health disparities. Now, there are a number of health disparities that we tend to focus on. There are 8 priorities. They are where there is disparity, infant mortality, adult child immunizations, breast and cervical cancer screening, diabetes, heart disease and stroke, HIV, AIDS and sexually transmitted disease testing, teen pregnancy and unintentional injury and violence. Those are the areas that we focus on in health disparities. And these initiatives are, under Dr. Ellinger, directed towards intervening on those disparities. Expanding access to healthcare homes and preventative care, the Minnesota Department of Health, under his leadership, has certified 200 clinics as healthcare homes, which is a new primary care model showing promise as a way to improve quality of care, reduce costs, and be more responsive to needs. Addressing rural health disparities, Minnesota was awarded a 5-year, $3.6 million grant from the Centers for Disease Prevention and Control to address rural health disparities by increasing local and regional policy work that's focused on healthy eating, active living, and tobacco-free living. This is the kind of initiative that is done through the department to capture those resources, bring them into the state of Minnesota, and help our communities. An e-prescription, finally, this is one, the last one that I will highlight of many, is the e-prescription program, in which Minnesota is now recognized as the number one e-purchasing state in the nation for 2012. Electronic prescribing is the secure exchange of electronic information between prescribing providers, pharmacists and pharmacies, and payers of pharmacy benefits. The aim of e-prescribing is to enable better clinical decisions and medication management and to improve consumer satisfaction, which are important aspects of healthcare reform. So with that summary, I again offer Dr. Edward Ellinger's name for confirmation as Department of Health Commissioner.
Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, then Senator Sharon moves that the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to and confirm the appointment of Department of Health Commissioner Dr. Edward P. Ellinger. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
The motion prevails. So the appointment was confirmed. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam President. And I rise for the confirmation of Myron Franz as the Commissioner of Department of Revenue. As such, I would move that the report from the Committee on Taxes reported January 31st, 2013, pertaining to the appointment of the Commissioner of Revenue be taken from the table.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Senator Skoy.
I would move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Skoy.
Thank you. I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Taxes reported January 31st, 2013, the Senate, having given its advice, do now consent to the confirmation and appointment of Commissioner Myron Franz as Commissioner of the Department of Revenue.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you. And members, Myron has run the Department of Revenue now for 2 years very open and efficiently. He has been very professional in his opportunities to manage this department. Mr. Franz graduated from the University of Kansas Law School, has a BS in Criminal Justice from the Washburn University also. He has 27 years of tax law experience, and most recently he ran a small business here in Minnesota. As I said, he's been very accessible to legislators, not only to legislators but also to the public. As you all know, and many of you had the opportunity to attend some of the meetings that he's held across the state the last few years, he has conducted 162 some public listening sessions in more than 50 cities, hearing more than 7,000 Minnesotans. And this process that Myron has been engaged in is setting the stage for the tax reform that we're hopeful that we're able to accomplish this session. If you would allow me to tell a personal story, when Commissioner Franz was traveling across the northern part of the state, he was going from Duluth, Grand Rapids, Bemidji, and on to a meeting in Thief River Falls. And in the middle of the afternoon, as I had attended his Bemidji meeting, he had a little time, so we thought that he would stop and visit my farm, and perhaps we'd get a chance to have a dinner together before he went to Thief River for his 8 o'clock meeting. And so he came with his staff, and we looked around the farm that I and my wife, where we live, and very, very interested in the economy and the activities, the nature of the rural area that we live, the nature of the ag businesses that we work with and that we operate. He had an innate curiosity about the way the plants were growing, which was just refreshing to have an opportunity to talk about those things with the Commissioner of Revenue, and for him as Commissioner to have this experience of the small part of Minnesota that I live. So then we're going to have dinner, and you know, as Commissioner of Revenue and his staff, they'd eaten in, you know, nice fancy restaurants on Canal Park in Duluth, and he was eating at the nice restaurant in Grand Rapids, and had lunch at Sparkling Waters in Bemidji, which is really nice restaurant. So I thought that I'd give them an opportunity to have a meal in a little more relaxed environment. So I took them to the Trails Inn Bar in Trail, population 20, for the best $7 chicken dinner you can get in northern Minnesota. And it really was, we had a great time, sat and visited, interacted with some of the folks in the bar, and gave Commissioner Myron a little exposure to some of the flavor of that part of the state, and honestly, he fit right in. It was a great opportunity, and you know, I've visited with he and his staff since, and when they come back to St. Paul, you know, of all the meals that he's had in those 162 meetings, the one they talked the most about was the chicken dinner in Trail, Minnesota. So with that, I would like to say that part of the purpose of me telling that story is for the commissioner to have an understanding of the flavor of our great state and the flavor of the differences of all of our great state. And Myron certainly has experienced that. He's probably the most widely traveled commissioner of revenue that we've had, in my speculation. And so with that, it's an honor to present Myron France to be our next commissioner of revenue.
Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Senator Scoy moves that the Senate, having given its advice, do not consent to and confirm the appointment of the Department of Revenue Commissioner Myron France. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevails, so the appointment was confirmed. Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the report from the Committee on Education reported on January 31st, 2013, pertaining to the appointment of the Commissioner of Education be taken from the table.
All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Torres Ray.
I move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
All those in favor,
Madam President.
Senator Nenow.
Madam President, I move that the recommendation or confirmation of Commissioner Caselius be re-referred back to the Committee on Education.
Senator Nenow.
Thank you, Madam President. This motion is not a motion in opposition of the Commissioner. This motion is a request for some additional time before this body is asked to take a position on confirmation of the commissioner. There currently is a pending legal question. There's a question before an administrative law judge. The decision from that ALJ, I understand, should be coming later this month. One of the questions before that judge, and we have yet to hear any response from the judge, see any decision, one of the questions before the judge is whether or not the commissioner acted in compliance with state law or whether she violated one of our statutes. I think it would serve this body better and certainly would make for a better decision if we wait a week or two or three to get that decision and get that answer before we are asked to take a position on confirmation.
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to let the members know that we had a hearing before the Education Committee. This concern was not presented to the committee. The commissioner received, the acting commissioner received unanimous support. Only one member voted no. I was not aware of this concern. I, however, was approached by Senator Nelson last night about this issue, and I spent a number of hours last night trying to research this issue and trying to figure out how that particular question is pertinent to the recommendation that we are presenting today. What I have for you, members, is a document that is going to be passed out to you in a moment that describes the process that we will review, that the state will review, and that according to the statute has to be in place. The process takes a number of months, and it is required that we have hearings before the public, and we have conducted dozens of hearings. Over 1,200 testimonies have been submitted in writing, and we are still in the process of getting the results of some of those reviews. Before you, you have a copy, members, that actually tells you what is the process that the rules of the Minnesota Department of Education have to go through relating to the social studies academic standards. They have been assigned to Administrative Law Judge Barbara Nielsen as part of the rulemaking process, and the hearing was held on December 20th, 2012 in St. Paul. And there will be 20 calendar days of a period of review before the actual proposal will be made public. The initial deadline, you have these on your desks, the initial deadline for the submission of the written comments of the rulemaking proceeding were submitted for January 9th, and that is a period of submission that is described by the law. By law. The question before us, members, that has been, I think, presented to me is whether or not the commissioner overstepped her boundaries in requesting that we review the benchmarks. Clearly, members, we have to review the benchmarks. We need to do both. We need to have, we need to realign the standards with the benchmarks, and that was the request that the commissioner made. I would like to make a commitment to all of you members that we will review this in committee if it is requested by the members. What I did last night is that I reviewed her resume. I made a copy of her resume. I have ample evidence that she has been an outstanding supervisor and administrator. I have had the opportunity to meet with several administrators, and they speak to the caliber of her professional background and how she interacts with staff, how she's been able to guide her staff into, you know, tough conversations in education funding. So I believe that the commissioner has demonstrated her capacity to manage the department. We have a copy of her resume. She's a person who has dedicated her entire life to really build the credentials and the you know, what she needs in order to direct this department. I think this is a question that pertains to a different issue, and I will be happy to review it in committee.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, those who were in the Education Policy Committee will remember that I did question Commissioner Caecilius twice, specifically with the question, are you changing the benchmarks? And for those who aren't in education policy, you might think, why is that important to know if the commissioner is changing the benchmarks? Well, members, I will tell you, Minnesota Statute 120B.023, Subdivision 1C reads, provides that once established, the commissioner may change the benchmarks only with specific legislative authorization. Members, we have not given that legislative authorization. Many of us were here or in another body in 2003 when we wrote these standards and specifically put in a cycle for revision. We understand that standards may need to be updated, but this provision is in law specifically to prohibit wholesale rewrites of the standards without legislative approval. That's an important piece for us to consider. I do encourage members to vote in favor of the motion to send this back to committee where we can truly wait until the ALJ, this is before the ALJ right now, to determining if the legislative authority has been overstepped. And I think that's important to have that settled before we proceed to confirmation.
Senator Cohen.
Madam President, first of all, Senator Torres-Ray, thank you for offering that chronology of what's happened, because Senator Nino, when you stood up, I had no idea what you were talking about, not being a member of the Education Committee. But let me suggest a couple of things. I've been through a lot of confirmations on the floor of the Senate, I don't know, several hundred, I would guess, maybe more, I'm not sure. I've never heard anybody on the floor suggest that a commissioner or a prospective commissioner violated the law. That's a phrase I have only heard for the first time a few minutes ago, Senator Nino, from yourself. But let me suggest that what we're talking about is the ALJ process. We're not talking about a district court judge. We're talking about the ALJ process. That's not a violation of law. That's an administrative hearing that makes a determination as to whether or not an action of some public official is appropriate. It's not a violation of the law. An ALJ cannot make a determination as to legal violations. A district court judge can do that. And it's quite commonplace that when we have decisions of an ALJ relative to what might come before the state legislature, that what we do is then review it in the committee process. We don't hold up commissioner appointments. We don't suggest turning the matter over to to a district court. We listen to the ALJ decision and then make a determination as to whether there ought to be further legislative action. So I'll suggest what's called for in this case, or what Senator Nino has called for, a return of this nomination to committee is certainly without any precedent whatsoever, as best I know.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. I handed out an article from the Star Tribune dated January 17th. I'm not on the Education Committee, but just reading some of the things that she is suggesting that we change looks to me like a major rewrite of American history standards. And, you know, I want to have a full hearing legislatively before we move forward with this. So just a couple examples in case people haven't read this article. The 2004 standards place emphasis on the Declaration of Independence and its inalienable rights and self-evident truths. And yet the new standards minimize that almost completely as just another document. Post-Civil War, 2004 standards, thoroughly straightforward and balanced in their treatment of such crucial phenomena as urbanization, industrialization, immigration, and racial segregation. New standards stress the rise of big business and the implementation of institutional racism. It should give us pause, Madam President, and I would hope that we would refer it back to committee for more discussion.
Senator Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I really want you to pay attention to this because I think this is an important precedent. I do understand the concerns that all of us have, particularly the concerns that of those members that serve in the Education Committee because they ask for that appointment. I believe that we should have a hearing on this issue, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I have more than a couple of issues that I am very concerned about the department's position, and I disagree with how the commissioner presented recommendations related to ELL, to other issues. I would like to review that, absolutely. Bring it to the committee. I will be happy to have that conversation. To say, though, that we're going to use that to somehow argue that this commissioner, that Dr. Brenda Casilius, is not competent enough to hire the position of commissioner, it is wrong. You have her resume before you. You can see her qualifications. As a matter of fact, we seldom have an opportunity to see an appointed person working with several hundred people, working with several hundred districts, with thousands of people that approach these commissioners, these individuals, to work on very difficult issues. I think she has handled those responsibilities quite well. She had, you know, difficult times trying to bring us together during the last 2 years to really have conversations about very difficult topics. My request to you, members, is that you review that today. Absolutely, you will have some differences of opinion as to how we handle, you know, social studies standards, ELL standards, integration, the different formulas, transition to college. That's what we are to do today. We are here to review all of that, to go over that, to offer opinions as to how that needs to be handled. But today, I am asking members that you review her resume, her credentials, her ability to handle those administrative responsibilities that have been assigned by the governor and by us. So That's what I would like to ask the members to do today. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise to very briefly address the comments made by Senator Cohn, and I would indicate that unless there's a statute that I am unaware of, Senator Cohn misspoke, and I respectfully disagree. When an ALJ undertakes a case, that ALJ either has final decision-making authority or he makes a recommendation to the commissioner, with the matter then going back to the commissioner to make that final determination, which in this case would frankly seem very odd to me. So I rather suspect that in this case the ALJ does have final decision-making authority with the right of appeal by either party to go directly to the Court of Appeals. And I simply wanted to bring that distinction out to the members. Thank you, Madam President.
Senator Hahn.
Madam President, members, I believe the motion to re-refer this appointment adoption to back to the committee is appropriate. I think it is something that we ought to ask the committee to reconsider before we as a body act on this confirmation. I think that the fact that we do have an important matter before the administrative law court is a pertinent issue for this body to consider. It is no small issue. And there I know a number of members here who were here in 2003 when the standards was a very, very important issue in the Minnesota legislature. It was maybe the biggest issue that we discussed, certainly in the education area of policy in the state that year, and maybe in all of policy. And there were a number of hearings across the state, and it was very contentious. And it was very clear that the legislature intended to make sure that the standards that were adopted were reached through a process that involved compromise and agreement because they were contentious. And it was very clear that the legislature had the intention to make sure that those standards were not going to be changed without the consent of the legislature. And that was why the statutes that were referred to by Senator Nelson were written into the law. And if you go back and review the record, if you go back and look at the votes that were taken and look at the history of the adoption of those standards, you will see, and that will be very clear. And I think that anyone who administers the Department of Education would or ought to be familiar with the history of the adoption of those standards. And I would certainly expect that Commissioner Castellius would know that. And so in the course of the liberties that I think that she has taken with the revised and aligned language to, in fact, change those standards, I think was inappropriate. And then to have that be now be adjudicated by the court is an important issue. And it should be something that we as a body should be aware of and should have some ability to know what the disposition of that case is before we confirm her. And so I think it's appropriate for this body to say, well, let's send this back to the committee, wait for the disposition of that case, so that that can be considered as we consider her appropriateness to be Commissioner of Education. I think that's appropriate to do that, rather than prejudge this and say, well, even though this important issue is before the court, we're going to act today and say, well, we're going to confirm her, even though we don't know whether or not what she did was appropriate or not. And all I would say is that a person who is the commissioner ought to know the importance and the history of that law and ought to act in accordance with the intent of the legislature as that law was adopted. And if that didn't happen, that is something that we as a legislature ought to consider if we're going to confirm somebody to be the Commissioner of Education.
Senator Horsray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to repeat, members, these standards were reviewed and developed by teachers, a very large group of teachers, administrators, and experts in the field. These standards are not being developed by the commissioner. What the commissioner did was to make a request to review the benchmarks. Now, we will review this. We will review why this is an important issue, and we will educate members about this. Absolutely, Senator Hahn, I agree with you. This is an important issue. Some of us feel very, very passionate about it. I have to tell you, last night, I reviewed a document that was sent to my office related to this. I wanted to read everything, and I want to read this to you so that you know what kind of passion this kind of conversation sparks. It was said that during a hearing, Education Liberty Watch submitted a document stating that we use the term global citizens in our schools so often that we now put in doubt whether or not we are teaching our kids not to be loyal to the Constitution of the United States. When we talk about global community, I had a very difficult time reading this. So this is a 7-page document that was submitted with comments that are very similar. I know that we have strong opinions about this issue, that we have differences of opinions. But what I would like to ask again, members, is that you bring that before our committee, that we talk about our differences, that today you review commissioner's credentials, the commissioner's credentials, you review her background, and you review the work that she has been doing for the state of Minnesota and for multiple districts in the past, and that then you decide whether or not she has the credentials and the capability to manage this important department.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, this is not about the competency of Commissioner Casilius. I've worked with her on many things. I'm pleased with the work we did on laser focus on early literacy and principal evaluation. There's a lot of great things that we did. More funding on the education formula for our kids. But this is not about competency. And quite frankly, the issue I raise is not even about the social studies standards, over which there certainly may be differences of opinion. Members, this is about timing. This is about timing. I specifically think that we must allow the ALJ to weigh in on, has the commissioner overstepped her legislative approved authority. It's very clear if we could have gotten answers in committee that benchmarks were not being rewritten, then this would not be an issue. But that question was not answered, and if you review the tape, Commissioner Casilius specifically said, we'll see how the ALJ rules. We'll wait for the ALJ ruling. And members, I think we do need to wait for the ALJ hearing. It's only a matter of timing. This is not a matter of competency nor standards. It's a matter of timing. We need to see the ALJ ruling, so I would encourage voting in favor of the motion to send this recommendation back to the Education Committee where we can get that ALJ ruling.
Senator Cohen.
Madam President, I move a call to the Senate.
Senate is under call.
Madam President.
Senator Cohen.
I move that further proceedings on the call be dispensed with and the Sergeant at Arms be instructed to bring in the absentees.
Is this for the balance of this confirmation or the full day?
For the duration of the session.
Okay. Senator Cohen moves. Further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the sergeants be instructed to move in to bring in the absent members. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. Motion prevails. Senate is under call. Senator Sieben, did you still want to speak? No. Okay. Then Senator Stump.
Thank you, Madam President and members. I rise in
in opposition to the motion to re-refer this back to committee. What I think we're missing in this is that the process of confirming the commissioner is not centered around the process of creating standards and how those standards are created. Some of us spent literally hundreds and hundreds of hours sitting in committee back when Senator Kelly was working on these as chair of the Education Committee. And it's extremely difficult to, as a group of legislators who have all different kinds of ideas, to put together these, what would be acceptable to everyone. And that's why I think the process is really turned over to some process other than the legislative process. But what I think the confirmation here is important, and Senator Nelson mentioned, we don't disagree with a lot of the things that the commissioner has been doing. She's been doing a good job. Many of you represent rural districts. She's been working on ways to enhance our small schools across the state. She's gotten many waivers from the federal government and grants from the federal government to try to make Minnesota a state that functions even better in our education system. She's got good staff people that are responsive to the needs that, you know, our needs. I think the idea of sending this commissioner confirmation back to the Education Committee would be a real slap in the face of someone who I think is really working to try to help move Minnesota forward in our education system. And I would hope that all of you would think twice about it and get behind the commissioner and support her confirmation. Thank you.
Senator Nenow.
Thank you, Madam President. Just closing comments, and I want to reiterate, this motion is not a motion in opposition to confirmation of Commissioner Caselius. This motion has nothing to do with changing the standards. This motion has everything to do with a sense of obligation that I have, and I hope you all feel you have, to this institution. We have a state law that says the benchmarks shall not be changed unless the legislature approves it. We have not approved that. When the commissioner was asked, are you changing the benchmarks? She would not say no. She said, let's see what the judge says. And that's what I'm suggesting that we do. Let's see what the judge says. And if the judge says she was perfectly within her authority, there's no question here. If the judge says she was changing the benchmarks in violation of this statute, that means she usurped your authority. And if she's already confirmed, she's no longer accountable to this body. If the judge says she usurped your authority, then we need to talk about that. And we need to have her in front of the committee in a position where she is held potentially accountable and ask, why did you do that? Are you going to do it again? Are you going to stop? Why should we believe you're going to stop? These are important questions for the integrity of this institution. This isn't about standards. This isn't about qualifications on a resume. This is about someone whom we're prepared to vote on confirmation today, whether or not violated a specific statute that says only you, the legislature, have that authority. And if a commissioner is encroaching on your authority, I would hope that you would stand up and defend this institution. Maybe we don't have to, but we don't know until we get a decision from the judge, and that's all I'm asking. Let's put it back into committee, wait for that decision from the judge, and take it from there.
Is there any other discussion? Seeing none, Senator Nino renews his motion that the appointment of Dr. Brenda L. Casilius, Commissioner of Education, be re-referred to the Committee on Education. For what purpose does the gentleman rise? Okay. A roll call has been requested. A roll call will be granted. The secretary will take the roll. Secretary will close the roll. Oh, wait a minute, not yet. Secretary will close the roll. There being 26 in favor, 39 opposed, the motion does not prevail. Senator Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to renew my motion that in accordance with the report from
Senator
the
Senator Ray, you have to make the middle motion. That was
Sorry,
never made.
Madam Chair, thank you. I move that the foregoing report be now adopted.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Ray. Now the third motion.
Madam Chair, I move that in accordance with the report from the Committee on Education reported on January 31st, 2013, the Senate, having given its advice now, consent to and confirm the appointment of the Department of Education Commissioner Dr. Brenda Casilius.
Is there any more discussion? A roll call has been requested. A roll call will be granted. Is there any more discussion? Secretary will take the roll. All those having voted, the secretary will close the roll. There being 45 ayes, 20 nays, the motion prevails, and the confirmation was confirmed. Remaining on motions and resolutions, Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam President. Pursuant to Rule 26, I designate that Senate File Number 58, Number 3 on General Orders, be made a special order for immediate consideration, and I yield to Senator Eaton.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam President. I would like to move Senate File 58, the Public Employees Contract Ratification, to be passed by this body. The bill is as a result of the 2011 contract negotiations between the Management and Budgets Assistant Commissioner for Labor Relations, AFSCME, and MAPE for fiscal year 2012 to 2013. It provides a 2% across-the-board wage increase for public employees retroactive to January 2nd this year through June 13, 2013. Higher health insurance deductibles, co-pays, and dependent costs are included. This results in a total savings of $7.9 million to the state employee group insurance plan. All increases in employee compensation for fiscal year 2013 do not constitute new spending. The cost will be absorbed by state agencies. This bill ratifies 5 collective bargaining agreements and 2 compensation plans.
Is there any discussion? Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Eaton yield?
Senator Eaton, will you yield? Senator Eaton will yield. Senator Gazelka.
Madam President, I just have a few questions. I know that the Legislative Coordinating Commission Subcommittee on Employee Relations reviewed this and passed it out. Was that a unanimous decision?
Senator Eaton.
It was divided on party line roll call vote.
Senator Gazelka.
So it was not a unanimous decision. Madam President, I'm concerned about how this is coming about. We listened to this in state government, and the presentation was given to us, and there was little discussion about what steps are. And we came to the understanding that more than 50% of state workers got a 2.7 to 4% raise that they call steps every year through the Great Recession except one. They said that their salaries were frozen, but it's not a, quote, hard freeze. And so I have another question for Senator Eaton, if she would yield.
Senator Eaton, will you yield?
Yes.
Senator Eaton will yield. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Eaton, do you think that steps are wage increases? And if you do not, what are they?
Senator Eaton.
The steps are generally a recognition of experience and increased ability in the job. They're standard. Usually the range is from 2.75 to 3.5. And at the moment, 50% or more are already at the top of the range, so they're not getting them.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. So that those approximately 50%, and I thought I heard in testimony that it was up to 4%, if we do this step, they get some of them will get as much as a 6% raise. Is that correct?
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam President. Yes, that's possible.
Senator Gazelka.
So, Madam President, part of the reason I bring this up is I want the public to know what we're trying to do here. And if it's truly a 2% raise and it was only on those that hadn't gotten steps, I would have a different opinion. But I looked at some of the data from Minnesota Taxpayers Association, and right now Minnesota ranks 7th in the nation as far as the average pay for a state worker, state employee. At around, I don't know, I don't have the exact number in front of me, $59,415. And if we factor in cost of living, we're number 5. And if we compare that to the private sector, what we pay our state workers, not including benefits, is on average about $10,000 more per person for similar skills. And so with that, Madam President, I would like to offer the A13 amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Gazelka moved to amend Senate file number 58 as follows. Page 2 after line 9, insert. And this is the A13 amendment.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. I can talk about this as we're handing it out. Basically, this amendment would do one simple thing, and that is anybody, any state worker that truly has had not a step, therefore not a raise, I absolutely think they should be getting a 2% adjustment. And so this basically would carve out all of those that have been getting 2.7 to 4% step or raise every year through the Great Recession. They'd be carved out, and only those that have truly had a hard freeze would get a 2% raise.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam President. I need the question restated.
Do you have a copy of the amendment? I just called on you to comment on the amendment.
Thank you, Madam President. Please.
Senator Sieben.
Madam President, I would question the germaneness of this amendment. It looks as though that Senator Gazelka is attempting to determine what provisions will be in future contracts for state employees, and it seems as though that is with beyond the scope of the current bill that's before us. So under the germaneness ruling, I would ask for a ruling of the president.
Just to remind the body what the rules say, Rule 35.2, that a non-germane amendment includes one that relates to a substantially different subject or is intended to accomplish a substantially different purpose than that of the original bill to which it is proposed. Advice. Senator Gazelka.
Well, thank you, Madam President. Then according to 35.2, you know, this is not substantially different. It's directly related to what we're talking about here today.
Any more advice?
Madam President?
Senator Eaton.
Thank you. I would just like to point out that we're here to ratify these agreements, not to bargain through the legislature. These were bargained fairly, and I believe that this amendment is not appropriate at this time. It's substantially different from what we're talking about.
Senator Limmer, more advice.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, as I look at the Gazelka Amendment, I see that this deals with compensation for employees. That in and of itself is not substantially different. And the suggestion that Senator Gazelka makes in compensation specifically is not of a substantial difference to garner a non-germaneness ruling on this. I believe it's well within the confines of our discussion, and believe it should remain in on the floor.
Any more advice?
Madam President.
Senator Tomassoni.
Madam President, I believe it's not germane just because it substantially changes the collective bargaining agreement, and the bill in front of us is bargained directly between the bargaining units and the state, and it's been agreed upon and it's been voted upon, and our job here today is to ratify this agreement, and this particular amendment tries to change the agreement, and so I believe this is not germane.
Senator Benson.
Madam President, advice, if we are issuing an amendment that is about a collective bargaining agreement to a bill that's about a collective bargaining agreement, isn't it then, in fact, germane? And the question of whether it should be ratified in this form is a question for the body to resolve.
The president rules that the amendment is germane. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. I'd like a roll call on this vote, but one thing I want to talk about in finally is that if we don't adopt this amendment, the contracts as we have them before us will, in the first 6 months, it's an additional $30 million, but in the next biennium, it's the next biennium alone, and it's an additional $250 million. And so I would ask for people's support of this amendment.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam President. This amendment drastically changes the negotiated agreements between the labor unions and management and budget, and I urge a no vote on this.
Is there any more discussion? Senator Bach.
Well, Madam President, I'm going to check with counsel, but I don't believe there's a provision in the law that allows the Senate the opportunity to amend the collectively bargained agreements between the state and the public employee unions. The provision in law only gives the Senate the authority to accept or reject the contracts. It does not give us the authority to ratify them or to amend them.
Senator Lass.
Madam President, members, to Senator Bach's point, I ask that the President rule the amendment out of order based upon the statute. It's a Minnesota statute, section 43A.18, that simply does not allow the legislature to amend the proposal that's before us. It's a straight up or down vote.
Would you repeat that statute number?
43A.18. Subdivision 1. Oh, no.
Senator Lass, can you send your statute up here? Where do you have it?
Yes, Madam President, it's...
Is it in the supplement?
No, it's in the...
In the 2012?
Volume 1 of the 2012 Minnesota Statute, Section 43, Chapter 43A.
Oh, 43A.
Yes.
Okay. Senator Lass, upon conferring, your motion is really not in order. I'd say if members believe that there is a conflict with the statute, they should just vote no on the amendment. Is there any other discussion? All those in favor of the amendment, say aye. Oh, I'm sorry, a roll call was requested. I apologize. A roll call was requested. A roll call will be granted. There being 27 votes, I'm sorry, those having voted, the secretary will close the roll. There being 27 votes in favor, 38 votes opposed, the amendment is defeated, and the amendment is not adopted. The motion does not prevail. Are there any other amendments or any other discussion? This is Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Madam President. I have Amendment A11. It was accidentally put under Senator Gazelka's name.
I'm sorry, what was your last phrase?
This was accidentally put under Senator Gazelka's
name.
Oh, okay. But it's Amendment A11.
A11. The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Chamberlain moves to amend Senate File Number 58 as follows. Page 1, after line 3, insert, and this is the A11 amendment.
Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Madam President, members. What this does, again, it addresses Chapter 43A, state employees, and how we manage that process. And what we're asking here is that all state employees and all legislators, including legislators, elected officials, contribute to their own health care cost. Thank you. And that amount is 5%. So we're not asking a lot. 5% for state employees, 5% for legislators to contribute to their own health care costs. The amendment also includes an amount that would remain the same, 15% for dependents. And I ask, will Senator Eaton yield?
Will Senator Eaton yield? Senator Eaton yields. Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Madam President. I'd like to ask Senator Eaton if she could tell me what the health care the premium contribution is from the state employees, and then if you could tell me what the number would be for Met Council employees, local government employees, and for private sector. Do you know what those percentages are that they contribute to their own health care costs, the employee health care costs? So that's state, local government, Met Council, and for private sector.
Senator Eaton.
Madam President, Senator, this is not germane. I would like to move on germaneness. The legislative benefits are not negotiated through the labor contracts, and so I'm asking for a ruling.
Senator Eaton questions the germaneness of the amendment. Advice, Senator Chamberlain.
Madam President, members, this is a prospective amendment. I'm not asking to change the current one. I'm asking that we adopt and change current statute. As you see, the amendment amends current statute. So I'm asking that we amend current statute prospectively, that for contracts negotiated after December 31st of 2013, that they change the way we negotiate that, and all of us will start paying 5% of our premiums towards our health care coverage. So it's prospective. Again, we had the germaneness argument discussion just prior to this, and I think it was concluded that it is germane. We're talking about the employee contracts, wages, salaries, compensation.
More advice, Senator Sieben.
Madam President, advice under the germaneness 35.1. This is actually a substantially different subject in that, first of all, I would say that this is talking about legislators' contributions to their health insurance. I'm sorry. This is actually just about health insurance premiums, but this would bind future bargaining agreements between the state and the employee groups, and that is not something that is contained within the matter that's before the Senate at this time. So I would argue that under germaneness this greatly expands the scope and is related to a substantially different subject.
Senator Thompson.
Madam President, I would respectfully disagree with Senator Sieben when she says that this is this can't be done because it's not contained in the provision we're dealing with. This is specifically amending a statute that already deals with that subject matter. It already provides for an employee contribution to the family portion of coverage, and this is simply addressing the individual portion of coverage. It's a modification to a statute that currently exists.
More advice, Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam President. We're here with the bill to ratify contracts, not to amend statute. This is totally not germane to what we're doing.
Any more advice? Okay. I agree that the first prong, that it is the same subject. We're talking about benefit plans for state employees and the state employee contract. However, the second prong is what's the purpose? And I think we have a substantially different purpose here than the original bill, because the original bill is talking about the current year, ratifying contracts for the current year, and the amendment is talking about contracts that would be ratified in the future. Therefore, I think it's a different subject. Therefore, I rule that the amendment is not germane. Are there any other amendments?
Madam President?
Senator Chamberlain.
I'd like to appeal the rule of the chair and ask for a roll call.
The ruling of the chair has been, motion has been made to overturn the ruling of the chair, and a roll call has been requested. The question is, shall the decision of the president be the judgment of the Senate? If you agree with the judgment of the president, then you vote yes. If you disagree, you vote no. Roll call has been requested. The secretary will take the roll. A yes vote upholds my ruling. All right, a no vote would overturn my ruling. The secretary will take the roll. The secretary will close the roll. On a vote of 38 yea and 27 nay, the decision of the president is sustained. Are there any more amendments? Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. I do not have an amendment, but I would like to have the author yield for a question.
Senator Eaton, will you yield? She will yield. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Eaton, in your opening comment, you made a reference that there's no cost to this, but I heard another discussion earlier today that there is a difference of in excess of $30 million. So could you explain the comment that you said that there's no cost to this bill?
Senator Eaton.
Madam President. Senator Limmer, the increase that happens between January and the end of June is to be absorbed in the individual agencies' budgets.
Madam President.
Senator Limmer.
Another question, Madam President. Senator Eaton, how does that work? I'm assuming that the $30-plus million is an accurate one. That's the difference between payment schedules now and payment schedules that would happen if this passes. How are the agencies supposed to absorb this? Do they buy less paper and pencils, or what do they do to cover that $30-some million of the taxpayers' money?
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Limmer, the state negotiated these contracts with the labor unions, and I'm certain they were aware of their accounting when they did so. This is from the budget that was passed last year, and I take their word on it that management and budget has it balanced.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. I was just handed a little more information. I guess that $30 million is only referencing the first year of a biennial contract, and the next year it would be over $250 million. So now we're talking of close to $280 million combined. And the question that I have is, just like anything else in our budgets, how do we account for that? I've got a rattly microphone, Madam President. But anyway, the question I have is how do we take care of this?
Senator Limmer.
I
want you to finish your sentence. Yeah. I'm sorry. Okay. Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Limmer, what happens is they make it up by vacancies within the department and by the retiring of older employees and the hiring who are at the high range and hiring of new employees who start out at the lower pay.
Madam President.
Senator Limmer.
Madam President, Senator Eaton, can you assure me that the agencies provide services, information to our taxpayers? Are any of those services going to be diminished by a result of this budget?
Senator Eaton.
Madam President, Senator Limmer, I have complete faith in management and budget that they calculated for that.
Madam President, I'm not sure if that's a yes or a no,
yes.
But I'll move on to the next question. I may not have the same confidence in agency heads to determine this, or more importantly, if we're not raising any money, adding to a budget, but we're going to give them pay increases, my brain doesn't go that far. And I'm trying to determine, are we going to experience, can you assure me that we're not going to lay off full-time employees to accommodate the pay increases for others?
Senator Eaton.
I can only speculate. I do not know.
Senator Benson. Oh, Senator Limmer, you come.
Well, Madam President, I guess I have even more caution now since I heard the words "I don't know" by the author. My question is how do we account for it? Senator Eaton, do you have a fiscal note on this bill to accommodate the $280 million?
Madam President.
Senator Limmer, would you be sure you address the President? Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Limmer, I am certain that under the labor contracts that they are protected, their wages and positions are protected so they will not be laid off.
Madam President.
Senator Limmer.
I have no further questions right now, but the caution I have is that in some of the questions that I've brought forward, the author doesn't know. We're relying on contracts that I haven't seen. I think at times, there's times when budgets do change, And if the budgets go down, certain people get laid off, and that's part of contracts signed by unions of what happens then. Oftentimes, the youngest employees are the first ones to be laid off at the expense of their families and their financial security and their lack of having health care. And the people that are the most senior in the contract in these contracts are the ones that keep their job, oftentimes at the very same time getting raises. That's been the history of many of our contract negotiations in the past, and oftentimes the part of boilerplate language that very few of us ever get to see. So I've got a lot of questions I'm sure I'll be getting to later, but so far I'm not satisfied.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam President. And I had the privilege of serving on the subcommittee that reviewed this contract. This contract actually has been in negotiation for almost 2 years. It was first presented to the subcommittee this past August. It failed on a partisan vote at that time and is now up for ratification. To me, it was unacceptable that we spent 2 years negotiating without legislative input so that there could be another voice at the table. But that is the way our statutes are. Some problems that we have within this contract. We currently, as a state, are having a difficult time hiring programmers and accountants to do our sales tax audits. We are having trouble hiring and retaining prosecutors. This contract does nothing to solve those problems. It spreads the money like peanut butter. We are not allowed to make adjustments by class for those places where we have challenges. The administration, with this contract, continues to have their hands tied in building the flexible government that we're going to need going forward. And so, members, as we ratify this contract, we are ratifying the status quo. We are building in a higher, more expensive base for an unchanging, unyielding government. So proceed with caution when you spend more on the status quo. And Senator Eaton, will you yield, please? Madam President, will Senator Eaton
yield? Will Senator Eaton yield? She yields. Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam President and Senator Eaton. Within this package, we affirm some benefits. Do you know how many holidays state employees are granted?
Senator Eaton.
One moment, please. I would like to point out
Senator
that...
Senator Eaton.
Sorry, Madam President. I would like to point out that over 19,000 people did not get their paychecks for 6 weeks during the shutdown for $65 million.
Madam President, I believe I asked a question about...
Senator Benson, I think they're looking it up.
Thank you, Madam President. I'll also be asking about the number of days of paid vacation and days of sick leave. And members, the point for my question when we get those numbers is so that you can have those numbers in your head as you go out to your constituents and small business owners. We are looking at a tax package that's going to hit our business community hard. And so we need to ask ourselves what we're doing to their employees and what we're doing to our employees. And so when Senator Eaton has those numbers available, I'd like you to hold them close as you go out of these doors this weekend and face small businesses as we discuss the governor's budget.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam President. They receive 10 holidays and one floating holiday for 11 a year. They also receive 13 days of paid sick leave, and they earn 13 to 29 days of, depending on the years of service, of vacation time per year.
And thank you, Senator Eaton. And
Senator Benson.
Let's also look at the accruals, which right now are approaching $300 million in accruals sitting on our state books. $300 million in accruals for vacation pay and sick pay. Yes, earned by the state employees. But
Members of the private sector are not allowed to carry forward in excess of 30 days of vacation pay and are not allowed to carry forward unlimited sick leave. We give those benefits to our state employees so they can be used to benefit their life in the time that they're serving, not as an accumulation to go forward. And so let us remember that as we ask more from the private sector in the governor's budget, we need to make these thoughtful comparisons with our public sector employees. And so, members, as you vote today, keep in mind that this does not provide us the flexibility we need going forward. It does not respect similar service in the private sector. And so, members, I would be urging a no vote today.
If there are no further amendments on the bill, then the secretary will give the bill as third. Senator Hand, did you have an amendment? I'm not going to close discussion, just I wanted to give the bill third reading.
Madam President, I believe there are some amendments that are being worked on, but...
I have an amendment.
Okay. All right, then we'll wait for third reading. Then next on the list is Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Eaton yield?
Senator Eaton yields.
Senator Eaton, are you aware of the maximum increase that any employee would get under this contract over the next 2 years?
Senator Eaton.
Madam President, I could calculate it if I found the numbers here. So it'd be 2% and up to, I think it's 3.5. So the highest would be 9%.
Thank you, Madam President.
Senator Thompson.
Madam President, thank you, and Senator Eaton. Along the lines of what Senator Benson was saying, our most recent GDP numbers here in this country demonstrated that we are actually in a negative growth situation right now. And hopefully that won't continue, but we don't know. And so I guess my concern would be that we all want all Minnesota employees to prosper, whether in the private sector or the public sector. But I think there should be an acknowledgement that public sector compensation should be somewhat gauged by how the private sector is doing. Right now, we're seeing potentially an economic downturn. We know that the national economy is very sluggish. People are still losing jobs. They're going long periods of time without pay increases. And I think to see a 9% increase in pay over the next 2 years for certain groups of employees is a very bad signal to send aid to Minnesota employees in the private sector that may have already lost jobs or have their jobs in jeopardy, and employers that are trying desperately to compete and hold on to employees in a time when it's very difficult to make a profit. I hope members will keep that in mind as we vote on this bill.
Senator Cohen.
Madam President, this is a remarkable discussion. I'm really glad I ran for re-election so I could listen to this. We've got Senator Limmer watching out for the poor state employees. We have Senator Thompson talking about one quarter of a 0.1 decrease in projected GDP. And all I can think of is, and I think Senator Benson, I hope I'm not misstating this, but talked about the inability to participate relative to the promulgation of these contracts. You folks have been in charge for the last 2 years, and in one form or another have been in charge for the last decade. What we've done is we have employees, now again, Senator Limmer expressed some real sympathy for the employees, and so I'm sure his sympathy goes so far as to be concerned about the fact that they haven't had any kind of an increase for a number of years. There's also been the suggestion that many people will be laid off. Then there's the conversation on the floor that we have a contract that we can't afford, that we should make sure that this is promulgated in conformance with whatever happens in private industry. Yet I remember a discussion a month ago on the floor when we talked about the Senate budget. And there was concern on our part relative to whether or not we were putting salaries at a level way beyond the salary range. And we got pilloried for raising those concerns. So when I hear the discussion about how unfair we are to the private sector, and that's just simply rhetoric, and how unfair we are relative to the promulgation of these contracts when you folks were in charge of the legislature for the last 2 years, when you folks had the administration for the 8 years prior to that, it makes me wonder whether or not we're really having a discussion about what the nature of state government is, or whether or not the discussion is simply, in all fairness, political points.
Senator Benson.
Madam President and Senator Cohen, having sat on the Subcommittee on Employee Relations during the 2 years that this was negotiated, there was no opportunity for legislative input. It is a collective bargaining action taken between the employee representatives and the administration. The legislature cannot intercede. We can simply vote yes or no.
Senator Limmer, briefly, then let's go to Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President and Senator Cohen in particular, I believe the job in the Minnesota Senate on any type of matter involving money should have questions regarding accountability. I think that's part of our job. I think you'd agree, being the chair of the Senate Finance Committee. We're talking of $280 million worth of taxpayer money that's being considered today without a fiscal note. A bill that passed your committee without a fiscal note. I didn't think I'd ever see that. I was rather surprised by that. But maybe that's just the way they do things in the Minnesota Senate. I'm wondering why we wouldn't have a fiscal note. Why under your jurisdiction you wouldn't demand that. Raising the question of whether or not I'm sincere about the financial viability of our state employees, I think should be a concern for every state senator here. And the reason I asked those questions was, how do you handle the $280 million hole that's being called that it's covered? And the question you have to ask is, if you can't get the money in the door to pay that new money, to pay those increases, that means you're going to have to take it from somewhere else. Either you reduce the services or you lay off state employees. I don't think there's any other way. Now, maybe zombie economics that we are beginning to see here has a different equation, but I don't know it. So, Senator Cohen, you can raise dispersions about our character on the Senate floor, which would probably be in violation of Senate rules. But when we raise questions of accountability for our taxpayers, that should be a subject that is absolutely expected in this body. Anyone who doesn't raise those questions probably is not fulfilling their oath of office.
Senator, once again, be sure you address the President. Senator Cohen.
Madam President and Senator Limmer, I wasn't suggesting you couldn't raise the questions. To the contrary, I'm suggesting you've had lots of opportunities to raise these questions in the last decade, either through the administration or through the legislature. Let me just briefly address, because you were in the committee, the Finance Committee, and I will tell you, as chairman of the Finance Committee, I've been the person who's gone after authors of bills, whether Democratic authors or Republican authors, for not walking into the committee without a fiscal note. I've been extremely hardcore about that over the years I've chaired the committee. In this instance, there's not an expenditure in this bill. It's a contract. It's the ratification of a contract. So it doesn't lend itself to a fiscal note. However, as you know from serving on the committee, there was an expenditure sheet passed out that reflected the cost, and you know that was in front of committee members. But again, this is not an expenditure in the context of why and how we would require a fiscal note. I can promise you, any bill that comes in front of the Finance Committee this year that has a fiscal impact in expenditure will have a fiscal note. And I would certainly invite you to challenge me immediately if we don't have such a bill, and that bill will be laid over until we get the fiscal note.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you. I think this discussion has not centered on the public employees and who they are, and they're Minnesotans. They're our neighbors, and they're our friends, and they live in our state, and they pay taxes in our state. The other option is to get more and more consultants in our state agencies, because that's what we're going to end up with, because we make sure that every agency tells us exactly how many full-time and part-time employees they have. But they don't have to tell us how many consultants they have. And I've looked at this issue for 20 years, and I can tell you that a lot of those consultants are getting 2 to 3 times what our state employees are getting, even with benefits. So I think we really have to be careful about that. We have a civil service system in Minnesota, and that means that people that go in and get these jobs, it's a very competitive process. We get the best and the brightest people, and they deserve decent salaries, and they do deserve an increase in their salaries, and they haven't had that for 3.5 years. So I'm tired of this public employee bashing. I'm tired of teacher bashing. These are the folks that do the work and do the tough work in Minnesota. And we want quality people. And if we want quality people, we have to treat them like quality people. And we have to stop bad-mouthing them. Thank you.
Are there any more amendments? Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Madam President. Well, I'm nothing if not compliant. I can learn. So I have the 852.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Chamberlain moved to amend Senate file number 58 as follows. Page 1 after line 3, insert. This is the A52 amendment.
Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, this is the same amendment I offered earlier, but for the fix for the germaneness. So this, we take out the date at the bottom, and we simply put in language that allows us, should bring us within the germaneness ruling. So it's the same amendment. We're asking for 5% of all state employees, including legislators. And, of course, we maintain the 15% for dependent payments. And I, Madam Chair, if I may, Senator Eaton, would you yield, please?
Senator Eaton, will you yield?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Madam President. Well, again, we'll start this over again, start from page 1. We all believe in fairness and reasonableness. I think most of us in here would agree that state employees deserve a raise and good compensation. I'm not against that. I'm not even necessarily against this whole package. I'm against the way it's put together. I believe it's unfair. It's unreasonable. And we talk a lot about fairness in this chamber. I hear it all the time from my good colleagues. It's not fair. Governor Dayton says it. It's not fair. We got to find fairness. So in that line, that's why I offer this amendment. It's fair. We're only asking for 5% from state employees and legislators to contribute to their health care costs for the employees. Now, Senator Eaton, I had asked you a question earlier, then we got into the germaneness discussion. So what are the employee contributions for insurance and health care for the state employees, for local government employees, for Met Council and private sector? Do you have those numbers?
Senator Eaton.
Madam Chair, I don't know the exact. I know that they pay 15% of the family insurance. Other than that. And they also pay, this year they've agreed to $7.9 million more in co-pays, deductibles for clinic visits, inpatient hospital stays, laboratory tests, medical scans, and prescription drug costs. I would also like to point out, Madam Chair, that this amendment applies to 43A, statute 43A, and which is not, so this should be in a different bill. This is not germane to the ratification of labor contracts.
Madam President?
Senator Eaton, are you questioning the germaneness of the bill?
Yes, Madam President.
Okay. Senator Chamberlain, advice?
Yes, Madam President, the last time this was ruled on, we talked about the date. This one here, if you look at the last two lines, All collective bargaining agreements and plans ratified under this act are hereby modified to be consistent with the limit on the state's contributions. And in regard to 43, Senator Eaton's right. This is Chapter 43. We are talking about state employees. Chapter 43 governs state employees, and that is what we're talking about. But in the meantime, I wonder if I could still ask. I have an answer for Senator Eaton's question, by the way.
Senator Chamberlain.
The answer to the question I asked Senator Eaton is zero for the state employees, average of 5.9% for Met Council employees, 9% average for local government employees, and 21% on average contributions to their own health care costs for private sector. Zero, 5.9, 9, and 21. So again, fairness. Let that sink in. Fairness, equitable, reasonable. We all know those words. And that's all we're asking here. We're not asking for 10% or 20%. We're just asking for 5% for us to contribute to our own employee health care and for the state employees to contribute only 5%. So let that sink in. Zero, 5.9, 9, and 21.
Senator Goodwin, are you giving me advice on germaneness?
Advice on germaneness, yes. I think what Senator Chamberlain is trying to do is to once again interfere in the collective bargaining process where employees are taking their health care reduction in premiums in place of an increase in their salary. And I don't think that this is not germane because they are covered under Chapter 179, the Public Employee Labor Relations Act, and this is referring to Chapter 43A. Thank you.
Madam President.
Senator Hahn.
Advice, Madam President. With respect to the amendment, Senator Chamberlain had an amendment previously that was ruled non-germane. The two-prong test was applied, and Madam President, you ruled that his previous amendment was germane. It met the first test but failed the second test because of the specificity of the date. His second amendment that he's introduced now has improved that by removing that date, and so it would seem to me that given your previous ruling that this amendment would have to meet your required test that you specified in the last ruling. And so I think the question that Senator Goodwin is raising may be something for the body to debate and consider and whether they're going to adopt the amendment, but it certainly is not a question of germaneness given your previous ruling.
Any more advice?
Madam President, you're still willing to have more advice?
Yes. Senator Marty.
Madam President, when I look at the title of the bill, it says ratifying state contract. It's not amending state law. It's simply ratifying the contract. And now we're going to change. I don't care what the changes are in how we deal with collective bargaining in the future. That's a substantively different topic. I don't know. I mean, the bill simply is ratifying a contract. We can do it or we can refuse to do it. But as far as I know, we're not able to. They're asking to change the way we negotiate in the future.
Senator Nina, more advice.
Thank you, Madam President. Specific to the advice from the previous senator,
I remember in my very first term when a bill came to this floor, and I exercised my right to reject that referral of that bill because I thought it should go through the Environment Committee. Senator Marty at the time was the chair of that Environment Committee. We had a hearing on that, Rules Committee or whoever oversaw that, and I referenced a number of historical bills that have been sent to the Environment Committee and referenced titles of the bill. And the discussion at that time was, doesn't matter what the title of the bill is, it's what's in the content of the bill. So the point that Senator Marty is making, referencing the title of the bill, using that precedent anyway, means nothing. It's what's in the bill. We have to look at the content and the subject matter specifically in what the bill is doing itself, not in the title.
Any more advice? Members, I think Senator Marty kind of hit the nail on the head, is that the purpose of the bill is to ratify a labor agreement, either yes or no. The purpose of the bill is not to amend it, improve it, change it, la-da-la-da. It's really just to ratify. And so if it does not then meet number two, it does accomplish a substantially different purpose than which the original bill is proposed. So I rule that the amendment is not germane.
Madam President.
Senator Hahn.
Madam President, I would respectfully appeal the ruling of the chair. And Madam President, just as a member of the minority, we certainly want to abide by the ruling of the chair. And what I am questioning the ruling on is, as I indicated before, we did have a germaneness ruling on a previous amendment. We were attempting to follow the instructions given by the chair on that germaneness ruling and perfecting our amendment to conform with that ruling. When we did so, we were now informed that the germaneness ruling is now going to be different than what it was made previously. We think that that kind of arbitrary application of the rules is a little difficult for the minority to abide by. So I would just challenge the ruling of the chair and ask that for a roll call vote.
The question before us is, shall the decision of the President be the judgment of the Senate? A yes vote upholds the decision of the President. A no vote does not. The Secretary will take the roll. Secretary will close the roll. There being 38 ayes and 27 nays, the decision of the President is sustained. Are there any other amendments?
Madam President.
Senator Hahn.
I would like to offer the A50 amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Hahn moved to amend Senate file number 58 as follows. Page 2 after line 9, insert. This is the A50 amendment.
Senator Hahn.
Madam President, members, the A50 amendment does not change the terms of the contract, doesn't change the prospective terms of any future contract. What this simply does is try to reflect as a priority one of the things that was debated very vigorously in the last campaign, which was the priority to restore to the education aid shift the 90-10 ratio that is the norm. We do have a provision in statute that requires that that be restored, and there has been progress made to that, but we're not at 90-10. And so all this amendment would do is say that until we are at that 90-10 ratio, that we would not spend any additional money under this agreement until we had reached that 90-10 ratio. So this would simply put in place a restraint, a limit, a condition on the execution of the terms of this contract until such time as that 90-10 school aid payment shift condition had been met. And Madam President, I would ask for a roll call vote.
Roll call has been requested. Roll call will be granted. Discussion, Senator Sieben.
Madam President, I question the germaneness of this amendment under Rule 35.2.
Advice?
Madam President, this is a substantially different subject. Senator Hahn is proposing that we now debate the school shift and the payback of the school shift. I believe that the subject at hand is this, a simple yes or no, whether or not we ratify the state employee contracts for this current period. And so based on the fact that this is a substantially different subject, I would ask that you rule this amendment out of order.
Senator Hahn.
Madam President, as I said, this does not alter the terms of the contract. It doesn't alter any of the conditions of the contract except for a requirement that the payment be delayed until such time as the school payment shift be restored to its 90-10 ratio. And I think this reflects certainly the priority that was debated in the previous election, that this should be the first priority that the legislature addresses. And members, this is the first bill before the body that is suggesting that we spend money. And it would seem to me that we would all be in agreement that if we're going to spend money, we ought to first maybe address the thing that was talked about as being the priority that we should address this year.
Any other advice? Then again, by the two-pronged decision, does this relate to a substantially different subject area? And I would say that the school aid shift is a substantially different subject area. And what is the intention of the bill? The intention is to ratify under the agreement under Senate File 58, and this would, what looks like it would alter the ratification of that agreement because it puts some conditions upon it. So I would rule that the amendment is not germane. Any other amendments? Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. I have the A51 amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Nelson moved to amend Senate File number 58 as follows. Page 1 after line 3, insert, and this is the A51 amendment.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, we all know that health care costs are increasing, as is the insurance. Certainly, that's a portion of the bill before us. We also are all leaders in this room, and we know that you should lead by example. That is the intent of this amendment. This amendment simply requires that legislators pay at least 5% of the premium for their health care coverage. That is the only change. Thank you.
Is there any discussion? Senator Sieben.
Madam President, I also question the germaneness of the A51 amendment. Premiums or their compensation packages are not included in the bill that's before us today. Again, it's a simple question of whether or not the legislature approves the contract that's before us. And so under 35.2 on the two prongs that you have discussed, this is a substantially different subject in that legislators' compensation or the benefits that they receive are not included under the terms of the bill that's before us today. And on the second prong, I believe that if Senator Nelson would like to discuss legislative compensation or our benefits, it would be more appropriate to bring a bill forward strictly on that subject, that this is greatly expanding the scope and therefore not germane.
The germaneness of the amendment has been questioned. Is there any advice for the President? Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. We are state employees. I believe that this amendment is germane. It is part of the state employee health, the CGIP program, and this is a very small step that we can take, leading by example. I do believe it is germane, and I have it drafted, Madam President, to your most recent germaneness rulings.
Madam President.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam President. State employees negotiate their contracts with management and budget, the state. Legislators do not get involved in bargaining unit negotiations, nor are we part of this current contract. It is clearly not germane. Thank you.
Any other advice? There is nothing in the bill that relates to the legislators' plan or the state capital plan, whatever it's called, for state capital employees. And so it really is related to a different subject. And the purpose, of course, is ratification of the labor agreements and compensation plans. So unless there's any more advice, I would rule that the amendment is not germane. Any other amendments?
Madam Chair,
Senator Nelson.
Respectfully appeal that ruling. And request a roll call.
Roll call has been requested, a roll call granted. Once again, shall the decision of the President be the judgment of the Senate? A yes vote supports the President, a no vote does not. Secretary will take the roll. All those having voted, the secretary will close the roll. There being 38 in favor, 27 opposed, the decision of the president is sustained. Are there any other amendments? Senator Chamberlain.
I'm compliant and persistent, Madam Chair. I have amendment A53.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Chamberlain moves to amend Senate file number 58 as follows. Page 2, after line 9, insert, and this is the A53 amendment.
Senator Chamberlain,
thank you, Madam
how
Chair.
This amendment is different from the others.
So the first one we had a set date. We said that was not germane, the last part of it. The second attempt we had to make this fair and make these contracts fair was rejected on germaneness. This one here is similar to Senator Gazelka's language. It still applies the 5% to all state employees and to legislators, but it applies to this contract. So we fixed the first one, we fixed the second one, and we're complying again to fit this in just the way the body would like it. So this does the same thing, but it applies to this negotiated contract in statute.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam President. Once again, we're negotiating a labor agreement on the Senate floor. This is not appropriate. This has been negotiated between MMB and the labor unions. It is not our place to change the terms of the agreement. It is our place to vote it up or down. Thank you.
Madam President.
Advice, Senator Hamm.
Yes, Madam President. I've been hearing the advice being offered a number of times that we have this bill before us that we are being asked to vote up or down on, and therefore that is the reason why we should not be allowing any amendments. That means that they're not germane. And I would just suggest, Madam President, that every bill that comes before this body, we are being asked or would be asked to vote up or down, yes or no. We only have two buttons, and it would be, to me, reasonable to assume that if that is the standard of germaneness, then no amendments would ever be germane on any bill. So I understand the desire on the part of the majority not to allow there to be any discussion on any issues other than the ones that they choose, but to use that as a standard of germaneness, I would suggest, Madam President, is not appropriate.
Any other advice? Okay, once again, I re-looked at the purpose of the bill, and the purpose of the bill is to ratify labor agreements and compensation plans, not to modify, not to change, not to improve, not to do anything else. So under those previous rulings, this is, again, a substantially different purpose, because the substantially different purpose here to the original bill is the changes in premium coverage. And that's not the purpose of the bill before us. The purpose is to ratify. Not all of our bills come before us are to ratify labor agreements. So under those circumstances, then number 2 is not met. Therefore, the amendment is not germane. Are there any other amendments? Seeing none, then, the secretary will give Senate File 58 its third reading.
Senate File Number 58, a bill for an act relating to state government, ratifying labor agreements and compensation plans.
Is there any other discussion? Senator Bach.
But Senator Limerick can go.
And there were a couple other people on the list before that maybe I should call on. Senator Brown, did you still want to speak? Senator Brown.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, would Senator Eaton yield?
Senator Eaton, will you yield? Senator Eaton yields.
Senator Eaton, what in this contract rewards employees based on their job performance?
Senator Eaton.
If they have a satisfactory job performance, they get their step raise. If they've reached the top of the scale, they do not get any reward for their job performance.
Senator Brown.
So, Madam President, Senator Eaton, so they do have a job performance reviews in this contract in order to get those raises?
Senator Eaton.
Madam President, yes, they have an annual performance review.
Madam President, point of information.
Senator Benson.
Having served on the committee, Madam President, I know that more than 90% and approaching 99% in some job classifications receive satisfactory, and therefore the performance evaluations give the feeling that they are perfunctory.
Senator Brown, are you? Senator Eaton, then Senator Osmak.
Madam President.
Senator Eaton.
I would just like to say that I think it's fantastic that we have such wonderful state employees.
Senator Osmak.
Thank you, Madam President. Just a comment, and I appreciate the final comment from Senator Eaton. Today we were told that we need to achieve fairness, that we need to retain the best and brightest. This is the second time I've spoken on the floor. The first time was directly to fairness and retaining best and brightest. I spent a Saturday analyzing what happened to the 2010 migration of staff members that went from the majority to the minority. I also looked at what happened to the GOP, which we complained about in the second legislative session. Without a case exception, the individuals who we treated fairly, or I'm sorry, which the majority treated fairly last time around, most did not receive the pay decrease when they did not change job positions. Some actually did take a pay cut, 5% or 10%. Meanwhile, when you're talking about fairness, when you're talking about best and brightest, this year, suddenly, the numbers don't shake out. Our individuals, when we had no change in our staff members, when we had no change on our legislative assistants, no change in job positions, took pay cuts, 5% or 10%. Some of them did reduce from committee administrators to legislative assistants. When that happened in 2010, there were 5 or 10% reductions in their pay. In our case, there was up to 40% reductions. So I challenge, because this is still up to her consideration, I challenge the majority, when you stand on the floor and talk about how we want to retain the best and brightest, how we want to be fair with public employees, that we start in our own house, that we start on this floor and live by the words that we're speaking here today. Thank you.
Senator Dames.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator Osmak just talked about, we also had employees in the minority that did not change job description, their duties didn't change, and the requirements of their job didn't change, but in some cases took a 13% decrease. Would Senator Eaton yield, Madam President?
Senator Eaton yields.
Senator Eaton, could you tell me in the last 10 years, or if you want to limit it to the time period of the Great Recession, how many people or how many times the people affected by this contract took wage decreases? Could you answer that, please?
Senator Eaton?
Zero.
How many years would Senator Eaton yield again, please?
Senator Eaton yields. Senator Dames.
Madam President, Senator Eaton, could you tell me how many years you have to go back before members that would be affected by this contract took a decrease in salary?
Senator Eaton.
Madam President, can we repeat the question?
Senator Dames.
Yes, I'll repeat the question. Can you tell me, the first answer was no, you didn't think anybody had taken one in the Great Recession. Can you tell me how many years you have to go back to find the last time that people affected by this contract took a wage decrease?
Senator Eaton.
Madam President, to my knowledge, through these contracts, there's either layoffs or they leave vacancies through attrition that the individual pay is not decreased when there's a shortage of funds.
Senator Dames.
Madam President, would Senator Eaton yield again?
Senator Eaton.
Senator Eaton, could you tell me, could you explain me to me then how the fairness issue works? We're talking about fairness. Can you tell me in relationship how the decisions made by the majority about a month ago and what we're doing today, can you explain the fairness of this and how that comes about?
Senator Eaton.
Madam President, I would have to raise a point of order. I think the two subjects are totally disconnected.
Senator Eaton, you can just say that. You don't have to raise the point of order. All right. Senator Dames.
If Senator Eaton does not want to answer the question, I understand that, and I can understand why, and so that'll be the end of my conversation.
All right. Senator Goodwin. Senator Goodwin, did you still want to speak? All right. Senator Nenow.
Thank you, Madam President. I wanted to go back to actually some comments that Senator Goodwin had made about retaining and keeping the best qualified employees that we have. And I happen to agree that we want the best employees that we have working for the state of Minnesota. And I've got a couple of questions along that line for Senator Eaton, if she would yield.
Senator Nenow, did you ask?
Would Senator Eaton yield? Yeah.
Senator Eaton, will you yield? Senator Eaton yields. I apologize.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Eaton, with a question previously from Senator Brown, you'd indicated that there are performance reviews in order for employees to be eligible for the 2% increase, and Senator Benson had noted that 90 to 90% of the employees get that review. What is the review scale that is provided to the employee? Is it a graduated scale, a 1 to 10 rating? Is it a pass-fail? Could you explain that to me?
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Nenow, the process for evaluating performance varies by agency. I do not know all of the different agencies' ways. I only worked in the healthcare.
Senator Nenow.
Madam President, could you give me some examples of the ones you do know, how those work?
Senator Eaton.
I believe my last review was involved either unsatisfactory or satisfactory or needs improvement, or I don't remember. There's like four or five steps that you were rated on each issue, and then there was an overall decision at the end.
Senator Nenow.
Thank you, Madam President. If Senator Eaton would continue to yield, And Senator Eaton, so then, were the pay increases that were provided to employees that received, it sounds like maybe we have a stellar rating and a needs improvement rating and a couple of graduated ratings in between, those that received the top rating, the most excellent employees, did they receive an additional pay increase as a result of their exemplary performance, or did they receive the same as those who were just making the grade?
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam President. My understanding is that they're eligible for the 2% increase. If they're at the top, they do not get anything.
Madam President, one last question, if Senator Eaton
Senator
would
Nenow.
So then, since the performance appraisal has no bearing on any kind of elevated pay, what in these contracts incentivizes our best and brightest employees to stay here and stay employed with us and to continue to perform at that stellar level?
Senator Eaton.
Madam President, first I'd like to correct myself. It's not a 2% increase. It's a step increase, and it can be more than that. I misspoke. Now I forgot the question.
Senator Nenow.
I can repeat that. Senator Eaton, if the rating of the performance appraisal on a scale of 1 to 5 or whatever that might be, if 5 is the best, if that's a stellar performance, if it's simply a cut score and you either get this raise or you don't, if there's no compensation tied to accelerated performance based on merely average performance, what else in these contracts incentivizes the best and brightest employees for the state of Minnesota to, number one, stay here working for the state of Minnesota, and number two, continue to perform at that elevated level?
Senator Eaton.
Madam President, Senator Nenow. Most people are working toward promotion, to moving up the steps in the whichever organization they're in, to some toward supervision, some toward just being a senior in that class. I did not see any lack of motivation when I was there.
Sum up, Senator Nenow.
Yeah, Madam President, well, that's fine. We all like promotions. We all like new jobs. But there are some people that like what they do. And if we want the best and brightest to stay doing the job that they love, we need to provide the proper incentive for them to stay here and to perform at the best level of their ability. Otherwise, we find circumstances where pay scales may become uncompetitive. I don't see Senator Benson on the floor, but I know that she has talked at length at other times about the dramatic need we have in our IT staff and how the pay that we offer them simply is not keeping up with the market. What we have here is boilerplate status quo, what we've always done in the past. We simply bump everybody up without making adjustments for need, without making adjustments for ability, without rewarding those extraordinarily successful employees who want to stay in their job. In addition, what we have is a significant number of our employees that are completely disassociated from the rising cost of insurance because they don't pay $1 of premium. So, Madam President, we have before us a proposal that on its face isn't necessarily bad. I don't mind giving raises to employees. But we have no reform. We have no change. It's simply doing what we've been doing for, I don't know, 30 years, 40 years, forever. And I would have hoped for more than that, Madam President.
Any other discussion? Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Nenow yield?
Senator Nenow, will you yield? Senator Nenow yields. Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Nenow, did you offer any legislation to alter this process in the last 2 years?
Senator Nenow.
Madam President, we've had this discussion. The negotiated contracts are out of the purview of the legislature. We did offer a number of suggestions on the floor here today. At one point, I had an amendment, but based on the rulings of the President, it was going to be non-germane. And I don't need to put us through the machinations of debating a non-germane amendment.
Senator Bach.
Well, thank you, Madam President. I've been sitting back here observing the debate going on, and just want to let those of you that plan to vote no today let you know you're going to have another opportunity to have a day just like this, because all of the state contracts aren't settled yet. We're going to see the contracts yet for our college faculty at our 2- and 4-year schools. We're going to see, I don't believe the Highway Patrol's contract is here yet, and I believe there are other couple of our smaller ones that, so you're going to get another opportunity to have another day like this, so be prepared for that. But I've been sitting here thinking to myself, who are they? Who are these people that we're talking about, that we're going to give a 1% pay increase to after, in 2011, we told them, go sit home for 6 weeks because we're shutting state government down. Because your paycheck's not important. What's important is we're not going to raise a dime of revenue to pay you. So just kind of thinking about my own district, driving up the North Shore in my mind as I was sitting here, and I was thinking about the Silver Bay Veterans Home. I was thinking about all the people, and it's the largest employer in that little town outside of the mine. The mine's outside the city limits. All the people that work there that care for our veterans in that nursing home. They're state employees. And my uncle was one of them until December when he passed away. They pick up the trash in our state parks, and I've got plenty of those. I think I have, I know I have more of them than any others do. I think I have 10 in my district. They process our driver's licenses, our vehicle transfers, and we all are getting some complaints about that, that's taken a little too long, and some of that is our own fault for cutting back on the number of state employees that we have processing those transactions. And then our other public employees that maybe aren't covered by this contract, but I think are all getting painted with this same brush today, that provide for our public safety, our firefighters, and our police, and the people that drive our ambulances when we have an emergency. Public employees are the employees who teach our children, plow our roads, patch our potholes, care for us in our hospitals. And yeah, at the end of the day, when we all go home, they're going to clean up the Capitol so it's all ready for tomorrow. They're going to empty the trash in our offices. And I rise today, Madam Chair, to thank them. All of the public employees across this state that have a huge impact on the quality of life of all Minnesotans, whether they work for the state or for the county or for the city. And I think sometimes we forget the services that they provide, how they improve the quality of our life, and how efficient they are. And somebody can look this up and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure I read the other day that we have the seventh lowest per capita number of state employees in our state in the country. In the country. We're even better than, I think, Florida, who have a lot of need for public services because they have so many elderly people. So they not only do it in a very professional way, they do it with an incredible level of productivity, because we're more efficient than 43 other states in delivering those services to our people. So I rise today on behalf of all of us to thank them and tell them that I'm going to feel real good about putting a green vote up for them. I wish it was more than a 1% pay increase. I think they deserve more than that, especially considering the fact that in the last biennium we sent them home without pay for several weeks. And I'd like to see a bipartisan vote for this bill. I think those people, I think most of us, maybe all of us, if we really drill down and think about it, appreciate the work that they do for all of us. And I think giving them a 1% pay increase, and if some of them have been here a number of years, a step increase to acknowledge their experience is hardly unreasonable. So I would encourage a green vote.
Senator Hand.
Madam President and members, and we appreciate the remarks of the Majority Leader, and I think all of us share the appreciation for the work that the many public employees do on behalf of the state and on behalf of all of us. And we know that they do work hard and they do provide great service. But it does seem to be the fact that we do treat our public employees fairly depending on where they work. And if they happen to work for the Senate Republican Caucus, then fairness has a different meaning. If you look at and judging by the actions of this majority and how the members, the public employees of that caucus were treated less than a month ago with respect to their compensation. And so we do think it's important how public employees are treated. And we do think it's important it's not just all the public employees who work outside of the Capitol, but also those who work in the Capitol. And it shouldn't matter which political caucus they work for. They should all be treated fairly and treated in the same way. I think, too, there is a lot of questions that have been raised about fairness and compensation, and it's been made very clear in the efforts that were made on this floor to try to offer amendments that I understand procedurally, and we understand how the rules work, that our amendments were not rule germane, but it was made very clear, because some of those amendments are brought up in committee, that there is no desire to ask public employees to participate in the payment of their health care benefits, not even 5%, which is markedly different than what most people do. Most people have some share in the cost of their health care, but we're not asking public employees to participate at all in the cost of that health care insurance. So I think that we're certainly being fair in the compensation and the benefits for our employees. But I would say that the question about whether or not we're asking for an improvement in services, or we're actually getting things, when we give people raises, when we're asking the public to pay more, are we getting more? And I would just say that this is an example. We're going to spend a lot of money. We're going to pass a contract that's going to pay a lot more. And I think it's an example, I think, of the larger theme that we're seeing emerge here, that we're being asked to pay more and expect less. And that's what this contract represents. And so, members, I would respectfully ask that we reconsider this contract and perhaps put some stronger performance incentives in how we do these contracts in the future and do it with respect to greater fairness.
The Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 58.
Don't bring that up now. If there's any other crossovers,
I don't need it.
Somebody should go over there and switch Jeremy.
Westcom hasn't voted.
Yeah, Westcom hasn't voted. So it's 25.
Well, it's 27.
Right, so we're missing somebody here.
All senators having voted, the secretary will close the roll. There being 40 yeas and 25 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Remaining under motions and resolutions will revert to the fifth order of business, reports of committees. The secretary will read the report.
Senator Skoy from the Committee on Taxes, to which was re-referred Senate File Number 1, a bill for an act relating to commerce establishing the Minnesota Insurance Marketplace, reports the same back with the recommendation that the bill be amended as follows. And when so amended, the bill do pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move that the committee report read by the secretary be adopted.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Latz.
Madam President, I move that Senate File Number 7 be withdrawn from the Committee on Judiciary and re-referred to the Committee on Health, Human Services, and Housing.
And this is your bill?
Madam President, this is my bill. The Committee Chair of Judiciary has approved this, and so has, I understand, the Chair of Health, Human Services, and Housing.
All those in favor? Great. All those in favor?
Madam President.
Yes, Senator Nino.
Thank you, Madam President. If Senator Latz would yield.
Senator Latz, will you yield? Senator Latz will yield. Senator Nino.
Senator Latz, having gone through this exercise myself last year with you, I just couldn't miss the opportunity to ask, could you please explain your bill and tell us why you're moving it from one committee to the other?
Senator Latz, briefly.
Madam President, Senator Nino, I'd be glad to do so. It has to do with guardians and conservatives and guardian ad litems. There are some provisions in the bill that will eventually become part of the judiciary consideration, but we think they're more properly addressed first in Health and Human Services and Housing, and then I expect it'll be re-referred back to us for review.
Okay. All those in favor of the Latz motion say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Announcements of Senate interest. Members, please remember that the potluck is fast approaching February 19th in the Great Hall from 11 to 12:30. Please sign up and let Kathy Warwick know what you were planning on bringing. And more announcements, Senator Latz.
Madam President, members, the Judiciary Committee will meet immediately following session. We're going to fit in what we can. We have budget presentations from the Post Board and the Tax Court. So please be there promptly. Thank
you. Without objection, the following senators will be excused from today's session. Senator Hurst, Senator Ortman. Are there any other announcements?
I have
Madam President.
Yes, Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Education Finance Committee will meet immediately after session.
Any other announcements?
Madam President.
Yes, Senator Marty.
Madam President, Environment and Energy Committee will not meet now. You can go have a leisurely lunch.
And any other announcements? Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move that the Senate do now adjourn until Monday, February 11th, 11 a.m.
Yes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The Senate is adjourned.